Today is Sunday, March 21st. Thank you.
Indeed.
Thank you, Wendell. And I'm here at Wendell F. Hutchinson's house on Highway 50. It is about 5:25 in the afternoon. And we are continuing our, this is our second recording of Hutch's life. And we ended up when you were 14 or 15, and you were driving your bike. You were driving a car to school and you didn't have a license, but we already went through that. So why don't you tell me some of the things you remember about what you did in high school, the activities, the classes you took. Did you like it? Did you not like it? Some of the friends you had. Go ahead.
Yes, okay. You get started on it, huh?
Time to start. Unzip your jacket. Okay, are you comfortable?
Do I have to talk into this thing?
No, you don't. You're just fine.
Just fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, when I was... I graduated from Valley View School over here, but it was the 8th grade graduation, and we had to go up... I think maybe already said that, didn't it? We used to... We went up to Poncha, to the old Poncha schoolhouse. There were about 31 districts in the county then, and so I went up there, and that's where I had gave my graduation speech, and I talked about Chief Uray and his wife Chipita and their son Palone. My great uncle Art had given me the story, and I was scared. I remember giving that speech in front of a whole room full of people up there in the top of the Poncha schoolhouse. So, I've talked to some others that graduated about the same time, like Art Post here in Slida. He remembers very well the same thing that happened. There was Lita Kenton Wine, a girl from Nathrop. She graduated the tops in our class at Slida High School. Lita Cannon-Wine did.
Mm-hmm.
She also graduated from the 8th grade, and she gave a talk at the old schoolhouse. I don't know what she talked about. I just remembered Art Post for one. Then the next year, my brother graduated, and he...
Brother who?
My brother Jake.
Jake, okay.
And he's about 2 years younger than I am.
Mm-hmm.
He talked on the Espinosa's brothers. They marauded the area.
That's
came
right.
Through killing different old timers that were in log cabins.
Right, you told me all that.
I told you that.
Last week. But...
Yeah, okay.
I'd love to hear it again, but we want to get to some other things. It was a great story.
So, anyway, that's what I talked about. It's getting warm in here, isn't it?
Yeah. Got the fire going? No? Need some help?
I'm going to stand up.
Here.
If I can get up.
Here, I can help.
You don't need a sheepskin coat on today,
no,
do you?
No.
This.
Well,
yeah, well
sure.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay, why don't you scoot up a little closer? Okay, so what were some of the activities you participated in high school and your classes and.
In high school, I went in. I was going to go out for football, and I did for about a little while. But I decided after meeting up with a couple of real tough guys in front of me and being snowed under, I thought I'd rather be a student. But it did make a different change in my life, too, when I quit. But being an athlete in school was a good honor, and a good many of my classmates did become good good athletes like Eugene Avey, Frank Curtis, Sammy Post, Art Post, some others. But I decided that I would, another one, Albert Starbuck. So those were guys on the football team then, and I, the coach was Gov Gruner, and he was a tough old bird.
Really. Gruner?
He scared me all the time.
Did you say Gov?
He bawled me out. Gov Gruner.
Gruner.
He taught mechanical.
Mm-hmm.
Mechanical arts. In other words, he was a shop teacher, but not the wood. It was the metal. Mm-hmm. They rebuilt old cars and farm machinery and stuff. And that was Gov Gruner. But he was an assistant coach, too. Remember the early coach White was a very productive coach. Slida High School in the 1930s won the state championship three times in a row. And then the final year, 1936, they got beat in the finals by Grand Junction, 6-0.
Ouch.
I remember seeing that game. It was a cold game. I went with my parents to see the game. So
did you ever play in a game, or you quit the team before?
No, I never
just
played.
The practice?
I didn't go out for any wrestling or basketball or any of those things. Some of my classmates did and really starred. So not only did the early teams of the 30s do well, but about the time I graduated, Neil Mehring was the coach. And Neil Mehring was, he had three different years where he got to the state championship but lost in the final game. The first game they played Fort Collins for the state championship. Back in those days, schools played everybody.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have divisions so much. But for example, he played South High School in Denver.
Mm.
They
wow.
played Fort Collins. But in that particular period, they played Fort Collins and lost 7-6. And then the next year, they played, Loveland, and they got beat by about a couple of touchdowns. And
wow.
then the third time, they played Longmont. But anyway, those were.
And what was the year?
That
again?
That's either
Longmont.
It'd be. I graduated from high school in 1942.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's close enough.
So
I was just trying to follow.
Yeah, so it was 1942. They beat Fort Collins. 1943, I think they played Loveland. 1944, they played Longmont.
Mm-hmm.
And they lost all three games.
Well, those were big schools.
So, some of the teachers I remember in high school were Mr. Bergner, and his son Jack was a classmate of mine, Jack Bergner, and then he was also a good football player, Jack Bergner. And there was, the teacher that taught Spanish and Latin was Donald Custer. Don Custer was a very good teacher. And I took Spanish 2 years. And then the final year I took Latin. I thought Latin would be good because I wanted to become a veterinarian.
So you knew
and
then?
I thought if I knew Latin terminology, it would help me, and it did. It did help me to take Latin. But the Spanish helped also, since Spanish is a kind of a Latin-based right. language. Mm-hmm. Let's see. The math teacher was Joseph Soles, and he was a wiry little man that always walked real fast to school, and he would always point out, if he would point to you and say, if you had your hand up, he'd say, you big boy, what do you know about this, sir? You big boy. And I don't know what he said to the girls, but every boy was a big boy. You big boy. Joe Soles.
Huh.
Incidentally, the high school burned too while, and later, not while I was in school there, but later. And this Joe Soles had a lot of different, he took geometry and he had a lot of geometry symbols up on his wall.
Uh-huh.
And they had a hard time keeping him out of there when the fire was going.
Aww.
He said, all my things are going to burn, and they did, I guess, because they wouldn't let him go back in and get them.
Do you recall the year of the fire?
I was on the school. I became, later after I got out of school, I was on the school board. I started, I think, on the school board about 19.
That's okay.
I can't remember exactly what year that
sometime
fire
in the
did
50s.
Take place. But it burnt the school down. Mm-hmm. And the present high school was what we built later.
Mm-hmm.
But I was on the school board 29 years.
Wow.
I was the president the last 18 years. I'd say that fire took place in the in the 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The chap that taught chemistry and physics was Alan Hampshire. Alan Hampshire. And he was I thought he was a very good teacher. He came from Coffeyville, Kansas. But the classmates was always trying to get Alan Hampshire to get off the subject, so they'd mention Coffeyville. And we get off on Coffeyville, Kansas, and he started talking about all the Jesse James and all the desperados in Kansas and get them off the subject. But he taught physics and chemistry.
Okay.
The principal at that, the superintendent at that time was Lawrence A. Barrett, L.A. Barrett. He was a very bright man also. Let's see. The principal then was a chap by the name of Kennedy. He's not related to John F. Kennedy and
no.
that group, but he was Irish.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a very good principal. Let me see who else.
Was there ever any reason for you to be sent to the principal's office?
Was there what?
Was there ever any reason for you to be sent to the principal's office?
No. No, I
that
was.
You want to talk about?
I was a pretty good boy. I
yeah?
didn't get sent to the principal's office much. So I wasn't reprimanded.
Did you have a favorite teacher?
Did I ever what?
Have a favorite teacher?
Yeah, I guess I did. There was a teacher that taught English. Her name was Wilma Scott. She taught English. She was still there when I was on the school board. We still had Wilma Scott, and she was really a fine English teacher. In fact, when I graduated from high school, I had to give a speech, and she was the one that taught me She wrote, helped me write out the speech. And to this day, I can't remember what I said. It didn't really make much sense. I'd have been better off if I could have given a good history talk.
So were you valedictorian of your high school class?
Lita Cantwine was the valedictorian, and the second in charge was Maxine Heberer.
How do you spell that?
Maxine Heberer.
Okay.
I think the Heberers owned the old Sherman Hotel in town.
Mm-hmm.
But Lita Cantwine was a country girl from out at Nathrop. The Cantwine family was among the earliest settlers there in the valley. But they had to give up their farm, too, because of hard times. So during the Depression years, the 30s, but Lita, we've had several class reunions since. In fact, our class, a graduating class, 1942, has had more reunions than any other class. I think we've had, 15 reunions. And the last one was our 60th. We tried to get Lita Cantwine to come, but she didn't. We had one of the boys in our class that I remember became a medical doctor, Dr. Howard Rupp. And I remember when he was in school, he was in Alan Hampshire's chemistry class, and he cut himself on a broken test tube, and he caused him to faint, and he fell right back in Alan Hampshire's arms. I don't know who. Alan was pretty. I think he was quite excited. I think he thought Rupp was going to die. But then Rupp went on to become a medical doctor.
Wow.
And he said all his life if he could stand all kinds of blood from other people, but if he cut himself, he would faint. And he couldn't stand to see his own blood.
Wow. So you had mentioned a little earlier that you took Latin because you knew you wanted to become a veterinarian?
Yes.
When did you decide that you wanted to become a veterinarian, and what caused you to decide that? How did you come to that?
Well, I tell you, my father, he used to help the local veterinarian around here do things. Dr. Christensen and the Dr. Riemann Schneider. They'd get him to go help him. He was good hand at throwing horses and that sort of thing. They'd get him because a lot of times in those days they didn't give the horse any anesthetic. They just put ropes on the horse and pulled their legs out from under them and threw them, and then the vet would castrate them. A lot of times, too, sometimes ranchers themselves would cut their own horses. Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's kind of the reason I wanted to be a vet was it kind of intrigued me. I remember Dr. Riemann Schneider's car and Dr. Christensen's car both. They had all kinds of drugs in, pretty much in the back seat of the car, and had an arsenal of drugs in there and bottles and chains to pull calves and that sort of thing. So that's kind of when I decided I would maybe become a vet. And since I hadn't went out for, I think I owe a lot of gratitude to a cousin of mine. He was second cousin. His name was Art Hutchison. And I have a son named Art Hutchison, too. But this was a second cousin. He was the son of Joseph Mills Hutchison, who was sheriff here from 1917 to about 1927.
And he was one of them that influenced you in becoming a vet?
Yeah, but those two different vets had their cars full of things, and that's one of the reasons I decided to become a veterinarian, I think. And then the fact that I hadn't, when I started, and I didn't go out for school, so I, out for sports, so I just started studying a lot. And I didn't graduate tops of the class, but I did graduate third in my class.
That's pretty good.
It was pretty good. Mm-hmm. Anyway. I mean, incidentally, there were 92 in our class, and that was the largest class for many, many years.
Hmm.
The very next year, when my brother died, and Rex Rhodes, you know Rex
oh,
Rhodes?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Sure.
Rex Rhodes were in that next class. I think there was only 55 in the class. But the reason there were so many there, 1942, during the late 30s, they were doing a lot of road construction around here on the highway, Highway 50, and the road over Poncha Pass, and up to Monarch. Those roads were all kind of rebuilt. Anyway, that's one of the another reasons, I guess, I became a vet, was that I was interested not only in the livestock here on the ranch, but in my neighbors too. Most of them all had cattle of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the Starbucks down here had a dairy, and if you go down the road, you still see a sign that says Starbucks.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Starbucks
right
dairy.
Near the bowling alley.
So, originally that was the King Brothers Dairy. And King each had a dairy barn, and on each side of it, the two dairy barns fully faced each other. And then the houses, if you go down by the Starbucks place, the two houses were very much alike, and they fully faced each other. Still do. But Betty Starbucks lives in the West Moat House, and the Eastern House was exactly like it. Most of the Starbucks boys and all grew up there in the lower house. Dr. Gene Abey, who is a vet in Glendive, Montana, also became a vet. He was in my class, and he was a good athlete, but he's still practicing.
Hmm.
And he's about my age, almost 80, and he's in Glendive, Montana. So,
so where'd you go to school?
Then I went to college.
Uh-huh.
We both went to see Colorado State University. Then it was Colorado A&M College,
yeah.
Colorado Agriculture.
They call it the Aggies, didn't they?
So that's where I went to college. That's where Gene Abey went also. But Gene went in the service first. I started in school at CS, well, at Aggie, and then I dropped out because my father, it was during the war years, he couldn't get help on the ranch, and I came home here for 2 years. I helped my father on the ranch. And then I went back about 1946 then. But I served a hitch in the Merchant Marine there just before getting back into college again. And so I served a hitch in the Merchant Marine and was in the South Pacific.
Mm-hmm.
And at that particular time, they were amassing great fleets of ships and airplanes, and I was on a tanker, the SS La Brea Hills tanker, and it went out to sea with a load of high octane gas. If it had ever been bombed, we'd have been blown to smithereens.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the thing about that was that's when Truman decided to go ahead and drop the atomic bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And the Japanese ended the war then. It saved a lot of, it caused a lot of lives of civilian Japanese people.
Yeah.
But it sure saved a lot of American lives because they had massive great amounts of ships and more planes and stuff, and they were going to attack Japan. But the Japanese would have really dug in, and it would have been a very costly error. So I guess Truman decided to do it right. He dropped that atomic bomb on both of those two towns, mm-hmm. and it devastated them. Terrible, terrible slaughter. Weapons of mass destruction.
Yes, long ago. Yeah.
That George Bush today can't find.
Oh, he's still looking, though.
He's still looking, though, yeah. Isn't he?
Let's see. So you graduated from Colorado State University.
Yeah.
In 1946.
There were about 45 in my in my graduating class. Mm-hmm. And I was second.
Hutch, you're really smart.
Well, I had pretty good grades. I studied like a dog, too.
Well, good for you.
Well, I studied long hours, I'll say that.
Well, you loved it, so that was a good incentive.
So, I graduated then, and I think I graduated in 1949. I know it was 49.
Okay.
The same year I buried my sweetheart, Sue. Sue Swallow. Mm-hmm. The Swallow family was an early family here, too. It was on Highway 50, down there about where the Ford garage is. That was Swallow property.
Oh.
At one time, they owned most of it. She and her early relatives, including Noel Bear, they owned all the water rights that Tenassi had. Some of the best water rights on the stream. I wish we'd have kept some of those rights, but we didn't.
Mm-hmm. So where did you meet your sweetheart?
Well, she came up to some dances here. I remember the first time I danced with her, and the first time I really noticed her much, was over at a schoolhouse here in Adobe Park. It was the Adobe Park Schoolhouse.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she was sitting over there with her two sisters, Frankie and Ann, and her dad was there, too, and her mother. And most of the guys were afraid to ask them to dance because they were afraid of Lou Swallow. He was an older man. He was the same age as my grandfather. And he also, so he was about 50 when he married Mrs. Swallow, who was a wall. And anyway, I remember walking across the floor feeling kind of conspicuous and didn't know whether she'd say yes or no. But she did, and so I had the first dance. I couldn't dance very well, of course, but it was, I remembered it as if it was yesterday.
Oh, wow. So you didn't actually go to school with her. This is when you were both of school?
No, she went to school here in the earlier years. Then they moved to Arizona. First they moved to California. Mm-hmm. She went to some California schools when she was little. Then she moved to Tempe, mm-hmm. Arizona. And she went and enrolled in Arizona State. And she graduated from Arizona State in 1949. The same year I graduated from CSU. Mm-hmm. So, we got married that same year.
Wow.
1949. Got married on August. I got out of college June the 10th.
Uh-huh.
And she had gotten out in late May, down at Arizona State, where we had the wedding in the old Presbyterian church here in Salida. And it's it was at 3rd and F Street. There's just a vacant lot there now. Mm-hmm. But they moved that church. They tore it down, and I have the windows, part of the windows in this house here, that come out of that church. The present Presbyterian church has most of the same windows that were in the original Presbyterian church.
So it was love at first sight?
Was it kind of, well, kind of, yeah, I guess it was. Anyway, I remember I went down to Tempe to ask her to marry me. I wasn't sure she'd say yes.
Oh.
I was out there. I went down to see her. I went with a friend from Aggie's in that early year. Went down with him. He drove me down in a new Plymouth. His name was Schaefer, Ted Schaefer. But I went with him, and he stayed there with us too. Some I should have proposed to her out on the prairie there. We went out to get some wood for the fireplace, but I didn't. I waited till evening, and it was kind of in a hurry. We had another engagement to go to, and my wife was kind of anxious to get there on time.
Your girlfriend.
Yeah.
You weren't married yet.
Yeah. And I was excited. Anyway, I pulled off on kind of a little side road, and then I proposed to her. I had a ring and gave her the ring, and she agreed to marry me. So we got married on August 17th, 1949.
Wow.
And then we were here a bit and then moved to Gunnison, Colorado, where I practiced for almost a year, and then came back to Slidell later and practiced here the rest of my life until just a few years ago.
Uh-huh. What did she get her degree in?
In education.
So she was a teacher?
Yeah, she was a teacher.
Uh-huh.
She also majored in piano. Uh-huh. She took piano and she thought maybe she might be a pianist for maybe an orchestra somewhere.
Yeah.
But after we got married, she was tired of that constant practicing for those complicated melodramas or whatever they are. So she never much, after we had family, she just became my husband. She helped me with my vet practice. She helped. We had 3 children, and they grew up, and she was really good to take care of the kid, and even the grandchildren. I had one of my granddaughters here just this past week. That she left just Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Abby Hutchinson. She lives. She's going to CSU, incidentally.
Right.
And she's majoring in animal science. But she was here. But Sue was she helped those 2 kids. My son Art had 2 girls, Aaron and Abby. Aaron was the oldest one. And she has a horse training business at Longmont now. But Abby is still going to CSU. She works at Starbucks Coffee, Starbucks Coffee Place.
Yeah.
Has to get over there at 5 each morning, 5 a.m., and open up and get it going and get the coffee perking and all that stuff.
So they followed in your footsteps in a way, didn't they?
Yeah, kind of. Uh-huh.
Did you show them when they were younger, did they get to stand by you and like you were learning and you found out when you were in high school that this was going to be the job you wanted?
They did have the opportunity kind of to grow up here. My wife, for many years they stayed upstairs in the upper bedroom up there, And when Abby came this past week, she went up there and stayed and reminded her of the day she stayed up there with my wife.
Mm-hmm.
She said that my wife would have Aaron on one side and Abby on the other. Sometimes they'd change sides, and sometimes one would be next to her, and they'd change, and the other one would be. So
you were a close family.
Yeah,
sounds like
we're a close family. But then we did have some disagreements, and so this kind of having her come here the other day was a kind of a reunion, I would say.
Oh, wonderful! Yeah,
which was very nice. My son Art and Lisa have kind of disagreements, and that was what I had some too.
Uh-huh. Well, I think all families have disagreements.
Have trouble, don't they? Yeah.
You're not the only one.
So
that's neat that they've followed in your footsteps, I think. That says a lot about you, that your granddaughters have followed in your footsteps. And, you know, they must admire you. And
would you repeat that, please?
I was just saying that I think that says a lot about you and how you influenced your grandchildren, you know, because they are doing very close, you know, the same type of work, at least working with animals. They have the love for animals that you do.
Right. She helped feed the cows the other day. She helped me change the water up here.
Uh-huh.
And moving tarps around and stuff, and she said that's what she wants to do. She says that's Abby.
Uh-huh.
She wants to come here. The other girl has that horse thing going, and I think she's doing very well with it. But she's now living in Longmont, and has her horse business there. She leased a piece of ground from a rancher, and it had a barn, a stable. And so she leases stalls out for horses. And she also teaches other girls how to jump.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron's got to be quite an avid horse jumper.
Wow.
So
that is a sport. So, we've got you graduating from college and marrying, and you have your children. I was just going to ask if you can remember... We had talked before we got on about the different ranches that were around. And
then?
When? The different ranches, when? A long time ago. Far back as you can remember.
I'll say there are some things that have not changed so much. For example, Frank McMurray has probably the largest ranch in the valley.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank McMurray still owns the ranch. And he runs it with his offspring. Well, he has three children, and one of them married a girl from the San Luis Valley. And they still run the ranch there at Nathrop. And then there's Joe Cogan. The Cogans had a pretty big ranch. And they run about 400 cows. But it has reduced some. Albert Eggleston runs most of the cattle there now. With Albert related to Joe Cogan. And
how? How is he related?
How are they related?
Mm-hmm.
The old original Jack Cogan had four daughters, and one of them married Norman Eggleston, and Norman and his wife then had six kids, and Albert who lives out here now, has one of them. Now, that ranch out there that Albert's on now was owned by some of the, I think it was owned by one of the Usniks. And then he bought it and he put sprinklers on it. And now he's made a real fine ranch and raises a lot of alfalfa hay to sell. And also, he went out to Joe Cogan, his uncle, and bought his cattle, a bunch of them. And so he's running on Joe Cogan's forest permits.
So where is that ranch?
It's out on the way to Buena Vista.
Oh, it's okay. About, the one in Nathan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's about, I'd say it's just about 3 miles this side of Buena Vista, 3-4.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Cogan Ranch.
So, and that was the Cogan Ranch when you were growing up,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, too. It was Cogan then also.
Can you remember some others?
Yeah, there was some. Frank Feeling owned a lot of the land that Frank McMurray has today.
Hmm.
Frank Feeling was Frank McMurray's uncle. And Frank Feeling was a legislator. Had been in the Colorado legislature as a representative from Chaffee Lake and Fremont counties. And so Frank Feeling owned a lot of the land that Frank McMurray has today. And there were other ranches that were not then in those days that I remember. One was a fellow by the name of Matlock, Charlie Matlock. He had a nice ranch. I mean, today it's owned by Alice and Gary Hill. They'd recently sold a lot of their water to, I think, Pueblo West off of those ranches they had there. Originally, those ranches were owned by the Donleys, John Donley. Alice Hill still, she works down here now at TJ Liquors, but her husband moved to the San Luis Valley and owns most of the land along Sawatch Creek over there. So he got, and he went over there with he's got a son-in-law, Tate Skanga, and his Mary Jo Skanga. One of them. He has another one, Corey Hill, and then there's a George Hill, and then there's another girl married, Josh Stout.
And what was that? Josh what?
Josh Stout.
Stout, okay.
And they have a little boy named Jace. J-A-C-E. Jace. So, That daughter is, and that's Allison Gary's daughter. Also living out there was, she was Peggy McMurray, but she married a chap by the name of Skanga, and they lived there at Nathrop, and she teaches school, I think, in the Buena Vista system. Hmm. Peggy Skanga. So. Oh, there's others, a lot of others too, I guess. There was Ray Saylor. Ray Saylor lived up there, kind of just below Buena Vista. And he has a sizable ranch. And originally, when I was here, the Paquette family owned the property. And the name Paquette.
Paquette.
There were several Paquettes. And the old Paquette house still sits on Highway 50. It's a two-story brick right on. It's not not 50, but it's 285.
Mm-hmm.
It's on 285. And it's the John Paquette House. So the Paquettes were early people here, too. There are not many of those left either. Harold Starbuck's wife down here is a Paquette. They live, they're our next door neighbors.
Betty.
But they own the old Starbuck property.
Is that Betty?
Yeah,
Betty Starbuck?
Betty Starbuck.
Was a Paquette. Okay.
Betty Starbuck. But I think Harold really runs and owns probably most of the property now. I don't know how it's fixed up for the family. But then one of the Paquettes, this Fred Paquette, married a Mosier girl, and she's still living, and she lives on Highway 50.
Mm-hmm.
And then Betty, that's the Harold's wife, is Judy. Judy, she was Judy Paquette, but she married Harold Starbuck. And Harold has two girls.
Sorry, Harold?
Harold Starbuck.
Starbuck.
He has two girls. And one, the oldest one. The youngest one's Amy.
Mm-hmm.
And she just had a baby, I think about the 29th of December, and she called it Mackenzie.
That's
and
cute.
She got a little daughter named Mackenzie.
Mm.
But the other girl has not gotten married. But both Amy and the other girl were very pretty. The one girl had horses for several years and competed in 4-H with her horses. Right offhand, the name of that older girl has skipped my mind.
Well, it's because you've got so much in that mind of yours. You've got an incredible memory. Why don't we go to some of the buildings that are some of the structures. Some of the structures that were around, we were going to talk about that today. Like, for instance, can we start with the smokestack and what you remember about it?
Yeah, the smokestack was built about 1917. And the reason it was built was to take those fumes from that smelter over there higher so it would drift off and hit the Arkansas hills instead of... Before, it was landing on the field around there and was poisoning the crops. So they built that tall smokestack. And it's probably 365 feet tall.
Hmm.
We had a committee in which I was kind of the president of the group. And we called it the committee Save Our Stack, SOS, Save Our Stack Committee.
Yeah.
And we saved it. We didn't have to know the right people.
When did you have SOS?
When?
Save Our Stack.
No.
Yeah.
It was before 1977, because George Everett and Danny Everett were alive then, and they were killed in this plane crash that hit the mountain up here. So it was just before that. I'd say maybe 1975, so
mm-hmm.
in the early 70s there, we had the SOS committee.
And obviously it worked, because it's still there.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you can...
I think one of the reasons, too, was that Jack Old Joe Lionel was quite instrumental in getting the right people to back us. I think Some people said he was even close to the mafia, but they...
Oh.
I don't want you to print that probably. But anyway, it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible. But that's what I know about the stack. Well, we saved the stack. Let's see what else. Oh, there's the Valley View School. I went to it, and they're trying to restore it now, you
mm-hmm.
know. They're trying to get a grant to restore it. I think they've got a grant to get... It's on the National Register
right,
historic
of Historic
Places.
Right.
You know where it is, don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So...
Highway on 140.
Yes, it
County
is.
Road 140.
Right there.
Yeah.
I went there 8 years. And my brother Jake went there 7. And then my brother Joel, who just called me this afternoon, incidentally, he went there till he was about in the 5th grade, I think. Then he mm-hmm. moved to Salida. I mean, they took him, mm-hmm. he was bused into Salida. And then my own kids, when they came along, they were bused to Salida, went to Salida schools.
Because this is where you lived,
yeah.
in this house.
And we bused along. Yeah.
Today
it seems like they just about bust everybody, even if they got a block, leave a block away. Seems like they get a ride to school.
Yeah, so did you tell your children that story? Well, I used to walk 5 miles to school. You know, that famous
yeah.
old story.
It was just 1 mile to Valley View School,
uh-huh.
1 mile there and back.
Well, it wasn't so bad.
Yeah. And the camels, incidentally, Kellen Campbell recently has had some articles in the paper. She heard she has a... There was Norman and David and Helen Campbell. They came down from the north, from the west up there. They lived on a place. We used to call it the Campbell Place.
Uh-huh.
They walked to school. They walked a little further than we did. About they walked probably a mile and a half. My brother and I went 1 mile.
Hmm.
But there were several kids on our way. There was the old Woods family. They supposed to build that school in about 1902. John Woods did. And a bunch of the Woods boys, I know there was Art and Bowles, and several of those boys went to school there. And then Ken Baker, the president, he's an attorney
mm-hmm.
here now. He went there to the Valley View School in later years.
Yeah, that has quite a history, doesn't it? Well, I think we're going to start to close now, so I just wanted to see if you had anything else you wanted to bring up before we called it quits on this interview.
And you can get another, you want maybe think of something another night?
Yeah, well, if it's okay with you, we'll get together again and start from your life right here as a veterinarian.
Sue and I, when we first got out of college, we went to Gunnison.
Right.
And we bought a Dr. Riemann Schneider's practice there. And we practiced there about a year before we came back to Salida. Do I have that already in there?
Yes, you mentioned a little earlier.
Yeah.
Well, why don't you tell me just briefly why you came back to Salida?
Well,
if you want to share it with
yeah,
us.
Yeah, my brother Jake came over to when we were at Gunnison, and he said, you know, he says, I don't like to irrigate anymore. I just am kind of fed up with ranch life. He had been doing that. And he said, would you and Sue contemplate coming back and running the ranch? And I said, yes, I would. So we came back here, and I didn't. And that was the main reason, I guess, because he asked me to. But then also, I loved it. I always loved the ranch. I loved to do it. And so I came back for two reasons, I guess. One, my brother wanted me to, and one that I wanted to, and Sue, of course, being a swallow down here, She wanted to move back to Stroud Ave too.
So it made everybody happy.
Made everybody happy.
That's great. And then you opened a practice here.
And so I was able to practice here.
And still ran the ranch?
And still run the ranch.
Wow.
And then about 1965, I built the hospital over there. And, mm-hmm. and then they sold that hospital here to Kit in about 1981. And then I agreed not to practice for 5 years and come back. And then in the meantime, I did quite a bit of work for Kit. And I came back and set up a clinic out here next door.
And just and the last couple of years, you haven't done it.
Probably the last, since about 19. Let's see, Sue died in 96. Yeah, about 91 or 92, I think, came back and, mm-hmm. and run there. And then after Sue died, I continued to operate it. And then Janet Barhus kind of bought the clinic, and she moved mm-hmm. up to her new place up there.
Well, you're quite a lot of history for Salida. And again, I enjoy talking to you. And we'll do it again. All right.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Hutch.
You bet. Thank you for coming out. I think it's nice.
Oh. Well, I've got a truck. I drive out. So maybe someday I'll walk out, though.